From KQED and the California Report, this is Capitol Notes, a weekly roundup of California politics from the state capitol in Sacramento.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
Welcome to another edition of the Capitol Notes podcast for the week ending September 28th. I'm John Myers from KQED Public Radio and the California Report, sitting here in our bureau at the State Capitol with Anthony York from Capitol Weekly and Laura Kurtzman from the Associated Press. And we have been gone for 2 weeks, primarily only because I went on vacation. That's like a really lame excuse not to do the podcast. But technically, I just couldn't figure out any way. I wasn't going to call in from Switzerland. I didn't know what was going on in politics. So that's my mea culpa.
The world stopped while you were gone.
Well, it's just sad that I feel like if we had like 8 listeners before we left, we might have like 2. But I hope not. I appreciate anybody who's listening back from our little hiatus. However, as we're here talking about what's been going on in politics, I don't think I missed a whole heck of a lot, did I?
No. You didn't. You took a good – it was a very opportune moment to take a vacation.
I mean, the session ended. We all know that.
Session ended.
And we went to special session, and then
lawmakers also went on vacation. Where are they? They're in lots of different places right
China,
now.
China, Argentina. They might be back from those trips by now.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that one of the fallacies that never seems to die away is that a special session means they're here every night burning the midnight oil, sleeves rolled up, working hard. And reality is there are very few lawmakers in Sacramento, if any, probably a few. And the governor's in Mexico at the end of the week doing some different events for a border governor's conference. And so the special session, what, really hasn't kicked off yet?
No, I mean, I think that there are sort of huddles, or Speaker Fabian Nunez has appointed working groups both in healthcare and water, the two subjects that the special session is dedicated to. And it's like today Friday, we finally have some legislation on the water side, and the health bills are going to be introduced any day now, right, Laura?
Any day. They keep saying that every day.
Let's talk about health care first in the special session. What, if anything, have we heard on health care?
Not much. Every day we hear they're almost there, and then they don't appear. So obviously there are some sticking points in the negotiations, and those have to do with the same things that have been problematic all along between the governor and the Democrats, which is what sort of an individual mandate do you have? And that's jargon for
who's covered, who pays.
Right. So how do you to what extent are you going to force people to have health insurance? And the Democrats, they actually amended their bill in the Senate Finance Committee, I think it was, or Appropriations, rather, to change it so that nobody would have to pay more than 5% of their income. So they said, we'll agree to some sort of a limited individual mandate, provided that there's this affordability cap on it. And that apparently is what they're insisting on with the governor. But that really changes his plan from, it makes it much less universal, and it also requires more of a subsidy. And then the other problem is, of course, how much are you going to ask employers to pay? There's still a gap between what the governor proposed, which was 4%, and what the Democrats wanted, which was 7.5%.
And so in the special session so far, the one bill we really have is the governor's plan, right?
It hasn't been written yet. That's what we're waiting for.
Yeah, true.
We're waiting to see.
Right. Well, it didn't have a bill in regular session, but there was this notion that he was going to have one in special session. Right?
Yeah. Although, what's your sense in terms of the holdup on the special session? Is it your sense, Laura, that the speaker wants to introduce basically a finished product? Is that the idea?
Not
or
necessarily.
Are there sticking points still among Democrats?
I think the negotiations right now are what will Nunez agree to as an opening point to introduce on behalf of the governor. So apparently it's going to be a leadership bill.
Right.
So he'll introduce it. But that doesn't necessarily mean that he supports everything in it.
Right.
So the negotiations are a lot around what SEIU will accept. Mm-hmm. So are
the prospects – do either of you think the prospects have changed at all long term for health care reform this year since session wrapped up, since I left and came back?
I don't know. You know, the one major change I think since he left was – the kind of divorcing, the open discussion about a ballot initiative. I think this happened after you left. The open discussion of a ballot initiative next November for the funding portion of the health care bill.
The sales tax idea, things like that.
Well, it would probably be a hybrid sales tax, payroll tax, and
hospital
and the hospital fee. That seems to be the most commonly talked about combination of funding sources. But in terms of a big change, even if there's a deal struck tomorrow, it seems like this thing is going to be hanging around for 14 months, probably not going to be implemented until voters have their say next November. And then who knows what's going to be on the ballot next November. I think if there is a funding, if they do cut a deal and there is a funding proposal for that deal on this ballot initiative in November of 08, we're going to see a couple of rival initiatives, maybe one from Blue Cross, the Chamber of Commerce, and maybe even one from labor, depending on how the bill works out.
Not to mention also that Hillary Clinton has certainly stolen a lot of the thunder on the healthcare debate. She may be on the ballot herself, right? So who knows? Maybe people will look at that and say, why should California do it when it's a federal problem and Hillary, you know, if I want healthcare reform, I'll vote for Hillary.
So a lot of moving parts.
And Hillary's proposal, by the way, does have an individual mandate.
It's very similar to the governor's proposal. It was interesting to see the coverage, though. Nobody gave Schwarzenegger any credit for that. It was all, and I think that's legitimate because he hasn't managed to pass anything. So she said that she got her inspiration from Romney, interestingly enough. Former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney, and also a failed Republican plan, actually that was a rival plan to her plan 15 years ago when she was in Washington.
Interesting parallels of Arnold and Hillary there.
Yes.
So there are a lot of moving parts in healthcare, it sounds like. And then we know the special session was also called on water, and that's been very slow, water issues. What, the Democrats have bills that they've put forward now, is that we're hearing? And
once again, you know, it's one of these backwards things where you have a more ambitious, more expensive proposal coming from the Republican governor, and it's the Democrats. In this case, it seems like Senator Don Parada is taking the lead on water issues, and his staff is, you know, he has a lot of people on his staff who have dealt with these issues for a long, long time. And in the Parada proposal is much less ambitious than the governor's proposal in terms of construction of water storage and dams and reservoirs and all these other things. So
and the governor is also taking on the peripheral canal, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, this longstanding notion that you would build some kind of way around the delta for water transport from Northern California to Southern California,
which in the past was. You know, that was radioactive in Northern California.
Yeah, very controversial.
But now they think that the trade-off will be the construction of a new reservoir, what's known as the Temperance Flat proposal, so that there would be water there for Contra Costa County in that portion that gets 100% of their water from the Delta. And so that would be the trade-off. We'd build a new reservoir and yet also build the peripheral canal. I think all those proposals still have strong objections from environmentalists who still want to focus on conservation and efficiency in dealing with the current water supply rather than investing money in projects for new supply.
And as I understand it, we're scheduled to have hearings on some of the water issues at the state capitol next week,
next
right?
week, right. And Assemblyman John Laird from Santa Cruz, Democrat from Santa Cruz, is sort of the chairman of the budget committee. He's kind of taking the lead for the speaker on these issues, and certainly Senator Parada himself has been closely involved on the Senate side for the Democrats.
So then, in finality to special session issues at this point, I want to ask you guys what you think about what didn't come into a special session so far, because I know when I left and was packing my bags and desperate to get the heck out of Sacramento, that there were all these kind of chatters about what would a special session be called for. Yes, health care, maybe water. Water wasn't one of the bigger ones sometimes you heard, but government reform issues, right. Prison issues, none of that happened. What happened or what didn't happen?
The political reform, I think, was a big one that a lot of people were talking about. And basically whether or not there would be an effort to get a redistricting initiative to appear alongside the term limits initiative in February of 08. I think that's still a big political calculus that hung over the entire legislative session, but also the special session about whether Democrats can cut a deal with the governor. And in exchange, the governor might offer his support for a measure on the February ballot that would allow all of the legislative leaders to extend their terms, all four. Mm-hmm. So that sort of fell by the wayside. The speaker says that there's still talk about redistricting in November, but it's still going to be opposed by Democrats in Congress, certainly.
Yeah, there's still sticky issues there. So largely none of that ever got resolved, I guess, is the bottom line. That issue. And prisons, I guess, we're moving forward on a three-judge panel, and something will happen there.
They convened last week, right. And taking the first steps towards what many people will be a population cap in California prisons that could lead to the release of 30 to 50,000 inmates in the next 2 or 3 years.
Well, let's talk about something that we do know is driving its way toward getting on the ballot, and that's these four measures that would overturn these Indian gaming agreements. And, Anthony, you wrote this week in Capital Weekly about the what kind of alliance would you call it? Odd alliance? Odd couple alliance?
Definitely, and yet not atypical for the world of politics, in which we often see these sort of disparate forces getting together for a common cause. What's interesting about this fight is that three of the groups that are involved in this fight have been suing each other for the last 3 years in California courts. The basic issue is that there were four new compacts signed by the governor last year, ratified by the legislature this year, that would expand gaming for four of the largest gaming tribes in the state. So now a disparate coalition of racetracks, organized labor, and a couple of other gaming tribes who signed their own deals in 2004 have come together to fight these new compacts.
Try to have them overturned by the voters.
Right. It turns out that the racetracks and the tribes who are opposing these new compacts have been locked in a three-year legal battle over those tribes' 2004 deals, but I guess they're willing to temporarily put those differences aside in order to try to overturn these four new deals.
And they're putting some serious money out there. I mean, it would seem like with the amount of money that's been fronted by the horse tracks and by the, for instance, the Pala tribe in San Diego County and the Auburn Indian tribe up here in Northern California, right. If you took that money and the money from organized labor, you've got enough money probably to get those signatures, to get those referendums.
AP Styles referendums. This is a subject of much debate in the Capital Weekly newsroom this week.
Yeah, I've wondered too. We've got the AP report. Yeah. You would say referendum too? Referendums?
Well, I took Latin in high school. Shouldn't it be referenda?
That's what I thought, but your style book says no. So anyway.
The style book is right. Don't listen to me.
Smart AP reporter right there. But suffice it to say, with that kind of money, that kind of backing, those four referendum measures are got a very good chance of making the ballot.
Yes, but there's still some discussion about how real the campaign is going to be. $5 million has been contributed to the qualification effort so far. $3 million coming from the racetracks, $1 million from labor, $500,000 each from Paula and Auburn. It's thought that that's the money needed to qualify these four separate referendums for the ballot. But then the campaign begins, and we're talking about a campaign that would cost tens of millions of dollars.
Do you think, Anthony, that there's enough of a—I mean, this is very hypothetical. I don't know if anyone can answer this, but is there enough of a backlash now against casinos, given the impacts that they've all had on, you know, local communities, that maybe people are starting to feel angry enough to vote them down?
Or? Perhaps, but it really depends on how this debate is framed. I mean, I think in 2003 we saw Governor Schwarzenegger begin to tap into that backlash. That the Indian tribes who were signing these deals were not paying their fair share. That led to the 2004 compacts that Auburn and Paula signed, in which they pay a per machine fee to the state for their expansion, and also led to these 2006 compacts, in which you have four tribes who already had deals signing amended deals that would expand their casinos but would contribute more money to the state. It'll be interesting to see how this gets framed. I mean, you've got gaming interests and tribal gaming interests on both sides of this fight.
So. And Arnold presumably would be on the opposite side of the racetracks.
Well,
right?
They're his deals. I mean, I would imagine he's got to stand by them. I don't expect him to take an active role in the campaign, but you're seeing the coalition of the four tribes already are up on TV, and they're on TV with ads featuring Governor Schwarzenegger signing these deals. So even if he is not going to actively participate in this campaign, Schwarzenegger and his image will certainly be involved.
I would just seem to think that once these things get on the ballot, everyone will probably all the players will have to re-examine what the reality is of where the voters are on this issue. Because, I mean, clearly...
Oh, you're not thinking like a political consultant, John. Come on.
I guess I am.
Come on.
But no, I guess I'm not. But I guess, you know, it just seems like, you know, the voters... You clearly can see this both in some polling and just kind of in the way that these issues have been talked about in recent years, that there is an undercurrent of in the public in California about Indian gaming, and has it really turned out to be what they thought it was going to be?
Right.
You know, and these stories of Indian tribes that have become these huge political players, and the money and the excess of it. You know, and the critics of Indian gaming clearly use that as a way to say it's not what the voters thought they were approving. So I just seem to wonder. I just seem to think that once these would get on the ballot, everyone would reevaluate. You know, what the chances are. You know,
well,
it seemed like a lot of fluid parts still here.
And that's up to the four tribes to make that case that, hey, look, this is a reaction. We understand the backlash that we saw in 2003. And that's why we sign these new deals in which we are paying our fair share. We are participating. We are giving money to the general fund. We are paying for all these programs that, you know, around the state. So that's going to be the challenge in sort of the framing of the debate. And I think, however, that framing will go a long way in determining what happens in February.
Well, I was going to say, as it often is in politics, whoever can frame the debate first often wins. Yes.
Speaking of which,
let's talk about something that happened here at the end of the week. This proposed initiative that's been floating around for weeks now, that would change the way California puts its electoral votes forward in the race for president, and would change the way our votes are, that would divvy them out rather than being a winner-take-all state, for lack of a better term, written by a prominent Republican attorney in California, Tom Hiltek, and looked like it had some financial backing from a different part of the country. And what we find out yesterday
backing.
On—
Backing, is that a pun?
Backing?
You didn't read the butt-biting article? Anyway, we'll get into
sorry,
that.
Sorry, that's our friend Carlo Marinucci's piece. I'll link that if somebody wants to see that piece. That's
yes,
good.
Yes.
That's nice, Anthony. See, it's my it's the head cold I've got. I wasn't quite with you.
Yeah, we're out of practice.
But we find out on Thursday of this week that initiative pretty much has just fizzled out, right? It's what it sounded like.
Yeah, the top two consultants both bowed out.
Hiltek himself,
saying that he felt deceived. And Kevin Eckery, spokesman. So
this is all about what? This is all about the people who put up the money, right? The
right. Was it $1.5 million? Was that the initial contribution?
Well, there's 175,000.
175,000.
Yeah, they couldn't.
I get my zero.
They say they couldn't raise any money, and then they're angry that this nonprofit corporation in Ohio wasn't disclosing the source of its funding. That happens all the time, though. So who knows what was really going on there? It's interesting, though, that they say they were having a hard time raising money. You know, I don't know if that says more about the incredible efficiency of the Democrats in killing this thing and warding off the donors. Or
that's exactly how we started this discussion, right, was about framing the debate.
Yeah.
I mean, the Democrats frame this debate very early as a Republican power grab and kept calling it that. And, right, held up a conference call with reporters yesterday on that very same issue. So
and they pulled out. Yeah, they had Feinstein out against it, and Boxer, Howard
Hillary
Dean, Pelosi. Oh, really? Yeah,
they just some of the presidential candidates
immediately just called out the guard against this thing.
So it's almost like it's almost like it died before it ever got started.
It sure did. Yeah. And it also may say something about just the dispiritedness of Republicans right now. If donors aren't willing to pony up for this, you know, they feel like, you know, they're kind of fractured and confused, and the base doesn't know who to go for. And maybe this was just one too many battles for them.
Yeah. You at some point, we'll all find out, or someone will find out, some intrepid
reporter really
will
happened.
Find out what really happened. And why, you know, and Tom Hiltek, who's a person who is well-known in political circles by political reporters, but I'm not sure anybody really still knows why Hiltek filed the initiative in the first place. And, you know, so there's a lot to be known about whatever mm-hmm. happened with this thing. Where did it come from? Who was it? Who really thought it was going to be something? Did they really think it was a serious initiative? Was it something to get draw attention away?
It's funny. I ran into Kevin Eckery the other day, who was laughing about how who was it? The some big editor in from a London paper, the U.S. editor for a London paper had taken him to the Four Seasons in L.A. And then he was on his way to meet the, you know, a German correspondent down at Ambrosia on K Street. And, yeah. you know, they were having a wonderful time getting international press off of this.
I guess ever since 2000, international fascination with the Electoral College remains rampant. But
yeah, the strangeness of the situation.
It is quirky. I mean, our system of technically electing a president is an odd one. I'm sure a lot of people don't fully understand.
Well, so if that seems like it's dead, then that certainly takes something out of the mix for, you know, kind of odd California impacts of presidential politics. And then just quickly speaking of presidential politics, we had a little flare of that in California this week. Laura, you spent yesterday, was it yesterday?
Thursday? Yesterday morning at the IHOP.
At the IHOP in Sacramento with Mitt Romney.
That's right. Some of Romney's critics would probably say that was an appropriate place for him to be since he has been changing his position somewhat.
Would that be a flip-flop pancake? Flip.
Yeah, that's good. Okay.
I was waiting for it. I was like, here comes the joke.
He was talking about healthcare, interestingly enough. And that was amusing because somebody asked him, the question was, I believe it was Peter Hecht at the Sacramento Bee asked him, you know, why have you been so critical of Hillary Clinton's health care plan since she modeled it on the plan that you developed in Massachusetts? And his answer, interestingly enough, was that it was government run and it was terrible because it was the federal government kind of ramming it down the throats of states. Then he was asked about what he thought of Schwarzenegger's plan, which is also modeled on Romney's plan in Massachusetts and very similar to what Clinton is proposing. And he said it was fine because it was a state developing its own plan.
So, nice deft footwork there by the
he's very
Republican
deft.
Candidate. And so what kind of reaction did he get from
the IHOP?
Pancake eaters at the IHOP?
Well, a lot of them honestly appeared to be there because the Romney campaign invited them there. It was remarkable how full the place was when he arrived and how empty it was when he left.
Right. So the Rudy Tooty Fresh and Fruities were ordered and then they were quickly consumed and gone.
Up.
But yeah, I mean, because
he was good with them, though. He's actually quite a charmer, and he's quick and, you know, at ease. He seems to have some skills as a campaigner, and he's, you know, it's not easy to position yourself as the conservative candidate in a Republican presidential primary when you've been the moderate Republican governor of one of the most liberal states in the country. So he's got his work cut out for him.
Has anyone seen Fred Thompson? I just haven't. Been out of touch for a couple of days, but haven't heard from him in a while.
Well, we haven't seen him in California, certainly. Yeah. I mean, you know, if nowhere else. Because I was going to say that the other candidate who made news in California at the end of the week was Rudy Giuliani picking up. Let me ask you this. Picking up the endorsement, and I want to know if we think this is a big endorsement or not. Pete Wilson, the former Republican governor of California, endorsed Giuliani. Is that big or not big? The faces in the studio here, folks, were
I don't know. I mixed. Mean, typically, you know,
Arnold is the big one, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, certainly for PR purposes. And the idea of getting an endorsement is, you know, you would think would be to be able to marshal troops and resources and, you know, get access to fundraising lists. I'm not sure, you know, Wilson, well, you know, in terms of the Republican Party here, I'm not sure what Wilson delivers. I think a lot of Wilsonites have actually already signed up with Giuliani. I just don't know in terms of actual resources or publicity what a Pete Wilson endorsement means for anybody out here.
Well,
nothing against Pete Wilson. I'd say the same thing about Gray Davis.
But I mean, but suffice it to say, I mean, Giuliani already kind of is in that same wing of the Republican Party as Pete Wilson anyway.
Tough on crime, moderate on social issues.
Yeah, and Giuliani's largely considered to be the Republican with virtually the vote in California. I mean, it's hard to see. I mean, Romney in Sacramento with pancakes is one thing, but it's hard to see Romney winning California.
Well, see what happens in Iowa and New Hampshire.
Right.
First.
One would think California, with such a front-loaded calendar, may wind up just following the momentum.
Remember when it was hard to imagine Howard Dean not winning California?
How times change.
Yes, yes.
Hey, do either of you think quickly that Arnold will endorse anyone in this race?
I don't know. He seemed to almost do it to the LA Times the last week, but the word was he was asked the question, who do you think will win? And he answered it. And his answer was Giuliani, unequivocally, rather. But he said that he won't. He probably won't endorse until after the Republican convention. So I don't know.
I'm guessing no.
Yeah.
The problem
I'm
is, you know, for him, too. His one of his high level advisors is working for McCain, Steve Schmidt. And
then again, right. I mean the team
and he's
Arnold,
friends with McCain.
The team Arnold has spread out all
everywhere,
the four
yeah.
corners of
his
the
former
Republican.
Team is with Romney and Thompson and Giuliani, his yeah. former campaign team. I mean, they're everywhere.
They're a little bit of everywhere. Arnoldites have dispersed across the land.
Yes.
Well, it was fun being back. I'm glad I'm back. I'm glad I didn't miss it so much. I really did take a good time to go on a vacation, huh?
Pretty good.
I didn't miss anything.
Nothing.
The editors will be happy with that. Well, until next time, thanks for listening. I'm John Myers from KQED and Anthony York from Capital Weekly and Laura Kurtzman from the AP. And we'll see you next time.